So before we begin, I would like to just put out the disclaimer that this podcast contains explicit languages. So just to let you know right from the start. I want to start off by sharing a quick story that I would like to share about being racially profiled. So this was before I was living in Toronto. I was still living in Montreal at the time. I was about 15 years old, I remember, and I came to Toronto to visit my brothers and sisters on Christmas vacation during the holidays. Myself and my cousin, Ron, we went to go watch this movie at the Eaton Center. This is when the Eaton Center used to have the theater in there. I think you'd have to go downstairs, I think, if I remember correctly. But we went to go see a Batman movie, Mask of the Phantasm. I'll never forget that. So after watching that movie, we decided to get something to eat. And then once we were done that, we decided to go to the arcade, which was, I believe it was Young and Shooter at the time, right above Young and Dundas. And, you know, I'm on vacation. You know, I'm having a good time. I'm watching people play video games and I'm trying to decide which game I want to play. I think I was watching these guys playing Street Fighter. So while I'm waiting for, I guess, my turn, I get a tap on the shoulder and I'm like confused because I'm like, well, who's tapping me on my shoulder? It wouldn't be my cousin, you know, because he just, I don't think he would tap me on my shoulder. But more importantly, I didn't really know too much people in this city at the time outside of whoever my brothers knew. And I turned around and there were two cops standing right behind me with a third one like coming towards me. And I'm like, okay, what is going on here? Next thing you know, I'm being dragged out of the arcade by my arms. Each cop has my arm. The third one has two of my fingers. And both of them are threatening to, and in their words, if I make one move, they're going to break my fucking arms and my fucking fingers. And I'm just completely confused by the situation. By the time I get outside the arcade on Yonge Street, my cousin, they already got my cousin basically pinned up against the squad car. He's cursing and going crazy. And I look up and there's City TV ready to report on the situation. And I don't even know what the situation is. So they put us in the squad car because apparently we fit the description. Essentially, we robbed the Hasty Market on Jarvis Street. I think it was like Jarvis and College, or it was a Hasty Market between College and Dundas, I believe. So they put each of us in two different squad cars and we drove up to Jarvis Road, parked in front of the Hasty Market, and the owners of the Hasty Market came out to the car to identify us. And when they came out, the cop told me, uncuffed me, and he told me basically to put my my winter hat on my head. And I basically, I didn't even try to pull it up, pull it down on my head. I just basically rested the cap, literally rested on top of my head, like I barely put it on. And as soon as the owner saw me, they said, no, these aren't the guys, you know, and they let us go. So the cops apologized profusely. They even offered us to drop us back off in front of the arcade. At this point, we're like, hell no, just drop us off at the subway station. And we immediately hopped on the train and went home. We never told anybody that story for years and years and years, because I know if my parents found out at the time, I probably wasn't coming back to Toronto ever again. And that's a story that kind of stayed between me and my cousin for a long time. And it was troubling, you know, at the time, you know, I didn't know my rights. So I didn't know how to necessarily handle it. And especially from being out of town, you know, that just wasn't a situation where I didn't know what to do. And plus, I wanted to come back to Toronto and visit my brothers and sisters. And I was afraid that that might not happen anymore had this story come out. So I just kind of held that in. In this case, I wasn't beaten. But how differently would things have been for me had I been wrongly jailed for robbing that Hasty Market on Jarvis? Who knows? And I share this story because so many of my brothers that look like me have a story just like this, or much worse. And, you know, we sometimes share these stories amongst each other because we all have them. I also share that story because being racially profiled or brutalized by police is something that we as black men and women don't always get to live to talk about it. Like brother George Floyd or Breonna Taylor, which would have been her 27th birthday yesterday, as of this podcast, or as of this intro that I'm doing right now, or Ahmaud Arbery. The protests that are happening globally is once again out of complete frustration, anger, and agony. And I hope this is the start of something real, like a real everlasting change. But that starts with us keeping that energy, the fight, and the pressure going on until we actually see the changes that's happening, which is why it's super important that we continue to execute after the protesting ends. So today on the Av Podcast, I'm joined by Mark Stoddard, the creator of Liwi 68, the Live It, Wear It clothing line, and by educational consultant Dr. Vidal Chavanez, as we open up the discussion about all of the ongoing events of the past 11 days after the tragic events surrounding George Floyd, what we need to do after the protest subsides. We get into all of it here. And with that said, it's the Av Podcast with Cal C on Sasha Av Radio. Rest in peace, George Floyd. Welcome to the Av Podcast, fellas. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming on the podcast today. I'm honored by that, of course. But just to get started, listen, I already kind of know your responses, but I feel like I kind of have to ask just to start things off. Even though I know what your answers are going to be to this question, I can't answer it for you. But when you first saw the video with George Floyd, how did it impact you? You know what, Mark, I'll start with you first.
Wow. How to unpack that emotion again. Wow. Frustrated, not shocked, because we've seen this before. But I think for me, this time was, it really revealed an emotion for myself, actually watching somebody die in front of me. Mm-hmm. And that got me a little bit more. That's a mixed emotions, man. I almost say another one again. Again, many words came to my mind, and I was just still up today. As you asked that question, I'm still thinking about it. It's, mm-hmm. It's hard to unpack right now. That's my feeling, to be honest, right now.
Okay. And what about you, Vidal?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's kind of the same thing. I think we've been sort of overrun with images of brutality, of seeing people shot, of seeing people be brutalized at the hands of police. The first time I saw it, and I didn't watch it all the way through because I couldn't, but subsequently seeing images like close-ups of the cop's face, mm-hmm. and close-ups of George's face, and like I found it like particularly difficult to look at. I haven't watched the full sort of 10-minute video all the way through because I'm truly not interested in seeing the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I felt like in the immediate aftermath, just kind of frustrated that the bar for people to, we've been talking about police brutality for years.
Yeah.
We've been talking about this like systemic oppression of black bodies for years. And the bar is set so high that you have to watch a man die on video before you'll believe us. Like that to me is just so frustrating, man. So now I go to work and like white colleagues are, hey, you know, I'm just checking in with you. Like, and I know they're doing it from a place of like really being interested, but it took now for you to be interested.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that to me, that is the frustrating piece, is that the bar is that high. Like you have to watch a man get murdered on video for you to recognize that there's an issue when we've been saying it for years.
Beyond years. And I feel like, just to touch on what you're saying before, the fact that you weren't surprised by it, the feeling that came across me when I first heard the story, I feel like I almost feel ashamed to say it because it's at a point now where like you're almost become like desensitized by the whole thing.
You know? Correct.
So it's like, even with the Aubrey Ahmaud story, like fortunately I ended up watching it by mistake. Yeah, sorry, I ended up watching it by mistake in terms of the video. Like, cause I wasn't planning on watching that either. And then I think I was scrolling Instagram and I happened to catch it. And I just said, okay, I watched it. Like, I didn't want to do it, but I ended up watching it. You know, and I mean, that situation was crazy, but obviously, you know, but that wasn't police officers doing it. This time, like, when I heard the situation the first time, I'm like, and I started getting, you know, messages about it and, you know, different chat groups and stuff. I just wasn't even interested in looking at it. I really wasn't. I just saw like the little image, and that was like enough for me. You know, we've watched this pretty much most of our lives, or learned about this for most of our lives, if not all of our lives. And I'm like, I know how this story ends. I don't need to watch this to the end. You know? Like,
yeah, but just to add what you're saying, it's just the sequence within that time frame of Aubrey,
Breonna Taylor,
all those things that are adding, and then you get this one that sets the bar even higher.
Yeah.
What the hell? So it got even more exposed. Like, that cut opened up even deeper to see everything, right?
Yeah.
So all the emotions were happening, and then all of us all cooped into this whole COVID-19 thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, what is going on? Like, how we're seeing this live like this, right? It's like that food in our face for one time, and for us to digest all of that. And you can't. That's a lot to unpack, man.
No, absolutely.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
In this particular case, what I find interesting is, so normally when something like this happens, because it's clearly a fairly normal situation, normally when something like this happens, we wait and wait and wait before the officers are dealt with, or yeah. And or even if they're charged, and or even if they're suspended, and or even if they lose their jobs. And in this particular case, they were fired immediately.
Immediately, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like that never happens. Yeah. And for this case to be the one that becomes the sort of flame that lights the powder keg that has existed in the United States for, 400 years, basically.
Right.
For this to be the one, I thought it's fascinating, like, all the different sort of complexities of this particular situation. And now, like, for the first time, I actually think we might see the people who did it brought to justice, and how fitting that this is going to be the one that, I mean, God willing, this one becomes the one that creates the systemic change that we've been looking for
yeah.
forever.
Yeah, no, I agree with that totally. Because like I said, you're watching the whole history of unarmed black people getting killed by police, or civilians taking that whole citizens arrest thing to like it's a sworn mm-hmm. oath or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think what did it for me, though, like what actually, because again, I'm like you, Vlad, I've never watched the video. I don't ever plan on watching the video.
Me neither. I'm not going to watch it. No. I haven't watched the Ahmaud Arbery one either.
Yeah, like, you know, again, we've seen it too much. Like, I don't need to mm-hmm. see anymore, like, you know. But I think, though, what actually set it off for me in my mind was, and this picture or this video wasn't getting circulated enough, I don't think, is the other image from that scene where they're showing it from behind, and they're showing the other cops that's on his back and his legs, because mm-hmm. all we're seeing is the Derek Chauvin shot, you know, from the front, but we're not seeing it from behind. When you see it from behind, I think that's where it's like, Jesus Christ, like that's where like it really, you know, incites the flames inside of your head. You know what I mean? When you see mm-hmm. that, because I think I'm like, mm-hmm. especially when you look at the videos, you know, again, he wasn't resisting arrest. And then you saw another surveillance video where they put him in the truck, and they beat him up in the truck too. And then they took him out. So like, mm-hmm. what was the whole thing for? You know? So I think at this point, it's like watching all of that is like, that's for me where it kind of hit home. And to touch on what you're saying, Mark, like, I think actually, you know, I'll answer that part. I'll come to that part in a moment, but I just think the whole framework of just everything about it just took it to a whole other level. Just his hands in his pockets, the smirk on his face. It was so cocky and sadistic. You know what I mean? I think that's where it was like, it was really like a shot at everybody's head.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
But
no doubt.
Yeah. But I think the other part of it too is just the fact that, like, and I think I was touching on this with you, Vidal, the other day, but I think the fact that we are stuck in this quarantine space, you know what I mean, with the whole coronavirus thing, and like, where everybody's stuck at home for the past 2.5, close to 3 months now at this point. Like, that's probably the ignition that lights everything on fire now. You know, and it's not to say that attention wouldn't have been paid to this if the coronavirus didn't exist and none of this was happening. We were living our regular lives and preparing for summertime and stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying this wouldn't have had an impact, or you wouldn't have seen, you know, like, news about this or eyes on this, or at least being paid attention to, but the fact that we're all home, I think it just really, like, because everything, our whole normalcy has been stripped. You know what I mean? And we're basically living on, like, we're almost like back to the roots and back to the foundation of how we're trying to live. And mm-hmm. the attention on this now is going to seek our attention a lot more, because we have, you know, we're home. You know what I mean? Like, there's only so much things you could do at this point now. Like, we're home. So right. That's the uniqueness of it, I think, where it just takes everything to a whole other level now.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. I think we were talking the other day at home here, and, you know, what if this happened before the global pandemic happened, right? Mm. So this happens, and then we're locked down in global pandemic. How much are we paying attention to this? So yeah, I hear where you're coming from on that, but I think that there's a number of different pieces that contribute to our current context that create the conditions for something like this to happen. So yes, you were talking before about the history of brutality at the hands of not just police, but white vigilantes who feel it's their birthright to go out and hunt black people. Mm-hmm. So yes, there is that history, but there's also a history of a country, if we're just talking about the United States for now, that has systemically made it difficult for black people to move ahead. Like, you know, we've talked for a number of these conversations about sort of the fallout of slavery, but even after that, the Jim Crow, the mm-hmm. redlining, where they wouldn't let black people to get mortgages mm-hmm. in order to buy a house, in order to grow a family, in order to have a leg up in the world. And mm-hmm. despite all of that shit, there's still some of us that are able to make it out and be successful. To be honest, at the expense of the bulk of us who suffer from a system that has kept us oppressed with all of those conditions. Mm-hmm. And then you have a moron in the most powerful position in the world, whose entire, first of all, a white supremacist in the most powerful position in the world, who intends on being incendiary and stoking the flames of hatred in the country. So all of that is happening at the same time. And the divisive nature of leadership right now in that country has created a context for this explosion of emotion. Like, it's clear. So it's not just, I mean, the pandemic certainly contributes, but that's not it. Like, that's not just it.
No, I agree. I agree with you. I think it's a melting pot of everything that's put together to make this so explosive. But I think I just believe that part of it is the fact that, like, the whole coronavirus and the fact that we're all quarantined too is playing mm-hmm. a part in it too. That we're paying attention to more things now. I feel like this experience, you know, we were talking about this a little earlier, like that we're just, everybody's trying to survive right now, but like, it's, you're awakening people, you know, in this situation right now, being that you're home and you're, because I've always felt like since all this started, this has been like I keep saying this is like a reset button push on like just society and your life, and what are your next steps going forward? How are you planning, you know, your next moves going forward in life while staying safe and doing everything else? But like, this is like such an important key, you know what I mean, of resetting. I don't think a lot of us realize like this was also going to float into society as well, but it's funny, like I think like in the last few years you're seeing a foundational shift in of the way that we were used to seeing the world, you know what I mean, from technology to just so many different things, you know what I mean, and I think like this is kind of like an example of that too. I'm not saying like this wouldn't have happened before, because obviously we've seen, Lord knows, we've seen so many protests, you know.
Yeah, but not like this. I'm just to add, like, this protest is happening. Every state is protesting.
And everywhere in the world.
All over the world. So this corona, COVID-19 came into effect. That was old news now, because people threw that out the window now. Because everybody's together now.
Yeah.
Nobody's that.
There's no social distancing now.
No. Everybody's together. So when did it settle to some degree? Will that virus go even higher now? Because who knows what they're talking about, or they're just talking about this virus was BS. Because everybody's sticking together now.
Yeah.
Mask on or mask off. Everybody's doing something. Everybody wants to be out there doing something. So
I was down at the demonstration in Toronto there, the Regis one.
What was the numbers? Because they say like at least 5,000 to 7,000 people were there.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of people, man. I saw
turnout surprised me, man. Like, I wasn't expecting it. It started off in Christie Pitts Park. It was rammed, like plenty people, man.
You know, when you say that, because I was talking to Louis March, and I was talking to back when 1992, when Rodney King got killed, was beat up, and then there was a shooting the week after here in Toronto when there's a protest, when they have to protest on Yonge Street with Dudley Laws. Mm-hmm. And the amount of people who showed up for that and the undercover cops, everybody there, there was a ton of people. But when, and Louis says, nah, not close to what this weekend was, so many people galvanized from mm-hmm. all nationalities came to this demonstration. And everybody had a voice to say something, right? Mm-hmm. So that brought the people. So
we were talking about that because the whole fam went down.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. we were talking about that in the car going down. And my wife was saying, the last time I went into Toronto for a protest was that Rodney King one. And mm-hmm. how interesting is it that we're now taking our three children.
Wow.
How is many that, years later?
You know what I'm saying?
To go to a protest in Toronto about police brutality. Crazy, man.
And just civil rights. It's sad because, Mark, how me and you met, you know, a few years ago was I did a podcast on the 50th anniversary of the Olympic protests, you know, with John Carlos and Tommy Smith, Dr. John Carlos and Tommy Smith. Like that's how it started. And then, you know, through the powers that be, we got connected, we got introduced, and just from hearing your story and stuff. So it's like, you know, we're celebrating something like that 50 years ago. I want to know like what guys like brothers like them like are thinking right now with this stuff, because that was 50 something years ago, man. These guys were running track. These guys were young guys, and 50 something years later, that'll be what I think October would be the 52nd anniversary of it now. Just to see that like we're still having to protest for things like this is beyond me, you know. Like
yeah.
The more things change, the more they stay the same, right?
Same.
I think one of the things I find interesting about this one is how international it is. Like, that there are people all over the world protesting. I do think, obviously, it's because of part of it is the heinousness of the crime and people just fed up with people in power getting away with shit. Mm-hmm. But I, to be honest, I do think some of it is a visceral reaction to the current president of the United States. And I think a feeling that people are tired of him, and so they're going to join in the protest of him. I do think that's part of it.
Of course. Agreed.
Yeah.
So that was my next question I wanted to ask. Are you guys surprised at the global impact of Floyd's murder in terms of the protest?
Mm-hmm. No doubt. I am. Much so.
It's just seeing, especially in the United States, how everybody's mobilizing now and coming mm-hmm. and actually making a stance this time and not backing away or not wavering, which is the interesting part of this whole thing. As much as all the police forces coming in, people are sticking to their guns and their values of what they're standing for.
Yeah.
Outside of the other anarchists, you have these guys throwing rocks and stuff at the one doing some stuff, crazy stuff, right? But you're not losing the narrative of what's happening and why is holding hands together on this one, right? So it's powerful.
Yeah. Definitely, man. I do think the international thing has surprised me quite a bit. I think it's partly Trump and partly COVID. Like, everybody's just like
tired,
got all this pent up angst. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I'm stunned by it, to be honest. Because you were telling me about all that, like people in Tokyo. I think we're in Japan. We're having a big major protest on this. And walking the streets, and I was like, wow, because you know, and I think yesterday I saw footage of the protests in France, in Paris, which was, I mean, that looked like you could see people as far as your eyes can see. Like you just, all you saw was people. That blew me away.
Okay, so here's a question then. So everybody's protesting in different parts of the world, but now do they have an understanding of why they have to make a stand for us as a people, as Black people? Do they understand the purpose behind this and making that change?
That's what I'm saying, man. I'm a little skeptical of that, because that's why I think it has more to do with an angst about being stuck in their houses for a long time and a frustration with Trump. Because I don't know if people just all of a sudden recognize how important it is to value Black life.
Exactly.
You think about a country like France and what it's done to impoverish Haiti and countries in Africa still to this day paying money for their freedom to this day.
How Africans are treated in France, which is a whole might be a whole other podcast within itself too.
That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying. So like all of a sudden what people now recognize the value of Black life. I'm a bit skeptical on that.
Is that me too? Me too. Mm-hmm.
It's funny. I was shocked because out of one of my friends, I call him affectionately as a South Sharaf family member, but him and his family went to the protests in Montreal, and he said the same thing. He said it was not only was it packed. He said it was more white people than it was black people mm-hmm. at this thing
mm-hmm.
that was mm-hmm. shoulder to shoulder with you protesting for George Floyd, and he said he was really shocked at that. You know, he was stunned by that, which kind of shocked me too. I'm like, wow, that's crazy. Like I didn't think the swiftness of this of the impact of these protests. I did not. I have to admit, I did not see this happening like that fast. And mm-hmm. I think with social media playing a part in it, into of just circulating, and you're able to go down so many different directions and so many different rabbit holes of information, of video. You know, of different protests and how people are acting in different, and it's exposing a lot of wickedness in the streets in the streets too, you know. Because go ahead.
No, but just to add to that, social media or this platform that everybody's on to speak their voice, I want to know what's going to be the consistent theme after tomorrow, after the week or goes by. Mm-hmm. Are you still going to be speaking to this? Are you back on taking your selfies and taking pictures of your food? Right,
mm-hmm.
this
mm-hmm.
is going to be an ongoing situation that's not going to change overnight. Like mm-hmm. you have to keep your foot on this, right? So mm-hmm. if you're about this and you draw the line about us as a people, you better stay on this, man. You don't come back to me when it's February to say something. Like right. you come back and speak to this. It's yeah, not a, so that's my concern. I'm watching how this plays out, and I'm seeing people now posting things. I'm like, are you really about this life, bro? Because it's only a few people who really speak to this. So, I'm watching in a way to see how this is going to play out because mm-hmm. I know a lot of people will drop the ball many times, and even I totally
agree with that. I see, people have been asking for different people to make comments, and you know, people with a following to comment on it and mm-hmm. to say Black Lives Matter, and you know, all these different organizations, including police organizations, putting out letters talking about, you know, caring about the community and wanting to build bridges, et cetera, et cetera. What I want to hear is, what are the specific actions that you are going to take to break down systemic barriers in your organizations, in the places you work, in the places you worship? What are you going to do to address the systemic issues that keep knees on the necks of Black people every single day? That's what I want to know. Yeah. I don't care if you take a picture with a Black Lives Matter sign and put it on your Instagram page. What are you going to do to change the reality of the situation? That's what I want to know. And that's not what I'm hearing a lot about.
And to add to that, this is pretty much the theme of probably the next couple of podcasts I do, because while saying before we started, we're not going to be able to cover all of this in one podcast. I mean, you're asking for decades and decades, and if you want to go even further, 400 years of oppression and these type of situations, you can't cover this in an hour. It's just not going to happen, you know. And it doesn't matter if you do two or three, which I plan on doing. It's not going to happen either. But I think the theme of why I'm kind of like, I'm definitely with you guys on this, because my whole theme on all of this, watching all this information, is okay. What are we doing when the protests fade? Even if, because as of today, all four officers are now charged. I think Chauvin mm-hmm. is the one he's charged with now second degree murder. Instead, they moved it up to second degree instead of third degree.
Correct.
So, which is all great. That's all fine, you know. And I mean, that's part of the societal push to make that happen. That's awesome. But even if the best case scenario, they all get convicted to the maximum extent of the law, what happens after that? To me, that's like that's been floating in my mind so much. And this is why I didn't want to like do a podcast or do a show on this right away, because I was wrestling with that fact. What is going to happen? And I'm not saying I have the answers, right? But I'm just like, what is going to happen post protest when this fades in a couple of weeks and we're not protesting as much? What, like, because right now there's a great energy happening right now that I'll be honest, it's been a really long time that I felt this kind of energy, if at all, but because of everything that's happening, it just seems really present and really strong right now. And so many different races, so many different people. Today we were bike riding, but me and my family were bike riding, and I got pulled aside by an older white woman that wanted to apologize to me and my wife about white people oppressing black people. She wanted to send a big apology to all the white people out there that's been oppressing black people and everything. And I, I'm watching this and my wife's saying thank you. I'm looking at her like almost like a telemarketer for the most part. Like, I'm like, you know, I just want to get to the point. Like, okay, like what directory are you selling me? I'm not buying it, you know, like, but like, you know, you're seeing all of this and seeing everybody like side by side with you and all that is great. But what do we do with this energy going forward now? You know, like what are the changes that we're looking to make just as a community? Mm-hmm. Like, what are the changes that we're looking to make? Like, that's to me, like the theme of this all, you know what I mean? Like, I'm scared to think what would happen if they get acquitted. I don't even want to put that in the air right now. Let me not even put that in the air right now.
For real.
You know, but like, I just want to know going forward, what is happening systemically? Mm-hmm. What is happening? What are the changes that's happening? What are we going to do to make sure that this pressure now stays
right
until the job is actually done? Not just these four officers going to jail or four borough officers, because they're all fired, going to jail. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, I mean, so I'll say a couple things about that. I think I totally agree, obviously. That's what I was trying to say. What happens next, and what are the structural changes that are going to be enacted to ensure that the systems that have kept us oppressed for so long change? What I find interesting now is you have these, and I like I said, just like the lady that you bumped into, I think very well-intentioned white folks. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. However, if you are the one benefiting from a system that keeps others down, A, it's your job to change it, not mine. And there seems to be this sort of feeling now where all these, oh my gosh, what are we going to do about this? Like, tell us black people, what should we do to make you free? And I think that's misplaced. And it stems from a sort of a deep-seated guilt about a recognition that they've benefited from a system this long.
Right.
And I don't know the answer necessarily. I know that that, for example, where I work, I'm going to try to push forward with things that I think will help to change the way the system operates.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
But I don't think that's necessarily my responsibility. That's the responsibility. Like, you want to end racism, get rid of racists. Like, the idea that you would ask black people to end racism, I think, is unfounded. It would be like asking children to end pedophilia or asking women to end domestic violence.
Right.
It's not their problem. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the problem of the people that are doing it. You fix it. Tell me what you're going to do. That's what I want to know.
But when you say that, it's almost like they have to be in a level of admitting the opportunities that they possess from this, right? And that learning curve of being of really accepting that truth that we've been oppressed. Some of them are still in denial. Like, no, you can work. If you work hard, you'll get what we've got. But it doesn't work that way. So it's that relearning and understanding and being honest and those uncomfortable spaces of those conversations and allowing those conversations to happen if they're ready to take that on. And some mm-hmm. of those white people are not willing to do that because they're mm-hmm. happy in the space that they're in. They're comfortable. They don't want to be uncomfortable.
Which lends to the Drew Brees comment that happened earlier today or this evening.
What happened, yo? I didn't catch it.
So basically what happened was, you know, to make a long story short, he was basically stating that doesn't matter what the protests and everything that's happening, he still thinks it's disrespectful that any player, because the question was asked if, like, what are your feelings on if players go back to going down on one knee during this upcoming football season? And he said, no matter what's going on, you know, I still think it's completely disrespectful to be kneeling during the flag. And then he went on a whole about, you know, his grandfather fought in the military and you got to respect those who fought in the military.
You know
what it upset me, though? Because I really like Drew Brees, man. Like, I really like Drew Brees. Like, I read that, I was like, oh, come on. I got to write you off, too. Come on.
There's a lot of people, but there's a lot of white people that we like, we kind of follow, that like they're cool. but you get them drunk and do something stupid, they expose themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Whoa, are you really thinking this way, bro?
Yo, honestly, right. how to mash up your legacy with one tweet, yo.
Exactly.
Honestly.
Like, how to become an Archie Bunker in a couple seconds, right?
Right. You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of, you remember, I can't remember, is it Michael Richards is his name?
The guy that played,
Kramer.
Kramer, right?
Yeah.
Like Seinfeld was, up until that point, Seinfeld was probably, I'm not going to lie, it was probably one of my top five shows ever. Like, I loved Seinfeld. And when he made that comment, I was like, oh, Kramer, like, Jesus, man, I got to write off Seinfeld? I can't even have Seinfeld?
Bro, he didn't just make a comment.
He didn't make a comment.
He had a meltdown. Yo.
I know.
He went off.
Oh, my gosh.
He saw black people like they were like the N-word came out how many times?
Yo.
It was almost like it was a glitch. Like the record was skipping and he couldn't stop it. Like the DJ wasn't there to pull the record.
Yeah.
Like...
Right. But, I mean, back to what you were saying, though. And see, this is my concern. Because if you look at Drew Brees as a microcosm of what can happen,
mm-hmm.
It's that maybe they just will never get it. Like, the fact that he, who is surrounded by brothers every day.
And living in New Orleans. Get it.
Yeah, can't get it. Like, still doesn't understand. Even after this man was murdered on live TV.
Okay, but hear me out there.
He still can't get it.
But it's not about hanging with the brothers and us have to explain it. It has to be somebody within his space that he can be comfortable and to speak and somebody can challenge him. To make him understand, for him to kind of digest what he's saying is wrong, because it can't be us. It has to be something in his circle.
I'm just saying, like, if we take him as an example, like, will folks ever get it? Like, will they ever understand? What is it going to take for you to be able to say, "I got you now. I get it." Like, this guy's still talking nonsense.
It's sad.
Unbelievable, man.
You're right. There's going to be a lot of those. There's going to be people who will not really want to get it. They're just stuck on one speed, and that's it. And they're not breaking from. They're just stuck in that way.
You're right. You know what? Your lives are in danger, but, you know, there are certain ways that you can tell me about it and certain ways that still make me feel uncomfortable. Yeah. Fuck you, Drew Brees. Yo, sorry, bro. He's gone. He's done. Finish with Drew Brees.
But there's going to be a lot more. But after this, you're going to see a lot more, like, a lot more Drew Brees is popping out.
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And you know what? I welcome it. The thing about this, like, you know, not to go back to Trump, but, like, the thing with Trump, you know, going into office and stuff is you started seeing the true colors of like, races were now having their chest out. Mm-hmm. And certain people now are making comments that you didn't expect to make comments. And I'm like, you know what? I'd rather see the devil in my face than not be able to see him in the bushes. You know what I mean? I want you to come out so I can now deal with you in a specific way and move you aside. You know? So
I hear you. I just wish the devil wasn't the president.
No, I hear you. I hear you. So pertaining to this, I totally agree with you, Mark. Like, I think, like, you're gonna see a lot more of this now, and, you know, people are gonna continue to be shocked and the true comments of what people are saying. Like, I think this is, like, with this whole few days of the protests and all the looting and everything that's happening, like, you're seeing a lot of things, man, that's just, it's being exposed. But go ahead.
But look up Ford. What did look up Ford said? I don't never see any racism. There's no racism. I'm like, what are you drinking, bro? What are you talking about? Canada's a beautiful place. We would never see anything like that.
I know.
And then you get Trudeau speaking again the opposite side. So
I know. Come on. Ford is right though. I mean, come on, it's a utopia here, Mark. What are you talking about? It's a
honestly
completely diverse utopia. Nothing ever happens.
He's smoking something, brother. I'm telling you.
Standing on stolen land, talking about we don't have racism in this country is the height of ignorance, man. Like
that's what we're facing every time. Man.
And then he took what he was smoking and he passed it to the left hand side to Quebec.
Right. And to the right. Saskatchewan's premier said the same foolishness.
Mm-hmm.
And that idiot Stockwell Day coming on TV talking about foolishness again. Mm-hmm. And I read today that he had to resign from the board that he was on. I can't remember board he's on.
I saw Telus, that right before we came on. Yeah, I saw
that. He's on Telus's board. He had to come off. Yeah. That's our idiot thing, man. Holy.
Oh, man. It's just, and I mean, you guys don't need me to share the examples, but I mean, I grew up in Montreal. I can tell you that's wrong. much like you guys can. It's part of the reason why a lot of us are here, you know, because it was just that bad at a certain point, you know. And I've been in Toronto long enough to know that Maury Povich used to say the test also determines that's also a lie, you know. Like at the same time, like there's a lot, like I said, the comments and stuff that are coming out, it doesn't surprise me. I don't know, man, I'm kind of numb to it all.
Yeah, Montreal is one of the places where I thought this protest is going to get hot, like something's going to go down. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad it hasn't resulted in too much, but it did get a little dicey.
Yeah,
but there's a long history of issues between Montreal police and its black citizens.
Oh my God,
as you well know, Cal.
Yep. Oh man. Yeah, that might be another like 5 podcasts. I might, you know, that might be like a podcast on a therapy couch, you know, at a point, you know. Again, like just to see some of those comments, it's borderline comical, really and truly.
So, but with all the humor, so the question comes back: what do we do to move forward as a people or individually, understanding ourselves and our power of what we can do? We have to now stay diligent with this, man. You can't. Mm-hmm. That's where it comes, what I believe from this, man. What I learned from all this, that we got to stay focused.
No doubt.
The light is on now. It's got exposed. Mm-hmm. We see it. We know who our enemies are. We know the line has been divided now. So let's gather the people who get it, and let's move forward on something. And some real solution, hard solutions, some change.
And I mean, I 5,000% agree with that. Like, I think, to touch on what you were saying before, Vidal, is just like, I think that some of this has to be, you know, changing and policing and with the laws. Like, that's the main focus, no matter what the determination is in court, which we're looking at, you know, guilty verdicts on all 4 of those cops. But I think policing, just the laws of all of that, I think that's to make the main focus. I think the other part is education and knowing your rights, you know, I think is a really pivotal thing, too, because I think, you know, the average person, if a cop pulls up on them, you know, the average person, you're nervous. You know what I mean? Because you don't really know all of your rights. You know what I mean? And there's a certain fear factor there. And especially for us, for obvious reasons, there's a fear factor there. But you feel like, you know, when you do know your rights and you do know there's certain things you can't ask for, you know, when you're getting pulled over and, you know, pulled over by like, and, you know, you did everything right and you're still getting pulled over because you're in a nice car, you know, the whole driving while black thing, like, you know, when you see things like that happen to you over and over and over and over and over again, like you know your rights. There's a certain sense of calm sometimes when you know your rights and you just kind of go at it a certain way. So I think everybody getting to know their rights, I think is huge too as well. You know,
for sure.
No, you say that, it's almost like what we should almost do. Like the budget that goes to the police, I didn't realize how much money they get. I'm like, take some of that money and create those classes for people to, they can learn the rights. So police don't have to go through all these awkward situations. If we know what we're dealing with and they know what they're doing, can solve some of those problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, take some money out of that budget. Like that's a lot of money they get, man.
Yeah, man, I think collectively as well, it's going to be important that we use like whatever momentum exists now to try to push forward on some of the things that we've been asking for a long, long time, both from a policy perspective, like government-wise, and then also from things that we demand from institutions, not just criminal justice, but education and healthcare and all the different areas where we see significant disproportionality and disparity and when it comes to black communities. So, like, for me, if you're asking what we do next, that's where our attention should be, I think, collectively. Those things that you're talking about, those individual things that folks should look out for their own health and well-being, absolutely.
Safety, yeah.
And then as a collective, some of those bigger pieces that we've been trying to fight for, man.
Yeah, I agree. The energy that's behind this, I think it's beautiful, and it's something that, you know, as I mentioned before, like I have to admit, like I've never really felt it like this before. But I just, the one thing I know is that we cannot waste this energy, man. You know, you keep hearing like the, you know, post COVID, you know, our normalcy is going to be changed. Yeah, and a lot more ways than one. That at least that's what the mentality should be. It shouldn't just be about mask and, you know, and having to, you know, do all these different things now, you know, post COVID. Like, it's got to be about, okay, well, laws need to be changed too. Like, we're not going back to like that old way anymore.
Right. Yeah, the new normal is newer as a result of the last little while. I agree. I mean, and that's what I'm saying. Like, we can't lose the momentum.
No, we can't.
Because we've seen this happen before where things fizzle up and then something else goes down or something takes the attention away and bam, it's gone. And as, I mean, if we're talking specifically about the United States, then, you know, suppose they have an election and suppose there's a new president and everybody thinks the world is fine again. That's a big concern.
It's a big mistake.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Big mistake for sure.
That's a big mistake.
Because then we end up back here again.
Yeah. Because that's the thing, right? I think that's the most important thing is we don't want 5 to 10 years from now, we're back protesting for somebody else's murder, you know? We're done seeing that now, you know? Like, we're done. Like, we're done, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like...
Well,
go ahead.
I'm just saying, unfortunately, in this world, that there's always going to be some kind of incident like this, to what level that is. I'm hoping... whatever, from this moment, we create something so if it does happen, we're more prepared for the dealings of this person who did it when it comes to the police, right?
Yeah.
If something has to come out of this, really has to come out.
And it can't be a situation where, because of this pressure, you know, now only like what is it? Like, how long was it this murder happened? Because it was a murder. Like, how long was it that it happened? Like, what exact date did this happen? I know it was last week. Was it 2 weeks ago?
Was it last Monday?
Last Monday.
Okay. Yeah. So last Monday, but only so what? 9 days later is when the other three cops are charged. Mm-hmm. Again, as you said, they got fired immediately. Like, that should be like, why is the National Guard in front of this guy's house? You know, protecting him, like a wall around his house protecting him. You know,
right.
Like, he's fired.
Right.
He's fired. He doesn't have those. You know, he's not in the boys club anymore.
Right.
You know, like, why is that happening?
What's interesting, though, is had this happened in Canada, well, I can speak specifically about Ontario. If this happened in Ontario, they can't fire him right away. He would have been suspended with pay until the end of the investigation, which probably would have lasted 3 to 5 years.
Right.
Homeboy would have been sitting in his house collecting his full check while this whole thing was going on. And so I'm not suggesting in any way, shape, or form that their system is better, but there are some things that are better. And we, like, if we're talking specific policies about this particular incident that we should change here, one of those is the ways to root out bad police officers.
Yeah.
When they do things wrong, there should be a way to punish them immediately or punish them appropriately for what they've done. And I don't think that exists now.
Yeah, I mean, when you see the, you know, the Me Too movement and like the Time's Up movement and stuff that's happening now, like, I think this movement has to be even more critical, you know, where it's come to this too now, where it's like, okay, now we're coming after bad policing, we're coming after bad leadership now, you know, when you're oppressing others or you're suppressing others' thoughts or their lives, their livelihood, like that, there's a time up for that too, you know. And I think that's where the focus it seems like it is right now, but it needs to stay for a substantial time now. Like, it can't be like I said, by like August, we're not even thinking about this anymore. It can't, that can't happen this time. So like that's where I'm at. Like I said, my biggest focus is like, it's after the protest, like what happens after the protest. Like, that is the thing that we have to, that conversation cannot stop. That can't dissipate. Like, it can't.
No.
Yeah, I hear you. I think one of the other things we have to make sure that we think about is how to protect our own mental health as black folk, as black men.
Yeah.
You know, seeing all this stuff and trying to, you know, go to work and trying to, you know, be with our families and be okay. And that's something we got to make sure that we don't forget about either.
Absolutely. True. Absolutely. Because
it ain't easy, man.
No. And I mean, you brothers, I know you guys have experienced this in your lifetime. Like, the mental health aspects of this is, there is a trauma to, even experiencing not just policing, but like the small things of like being followed in the store, having like people crossing the street when they see you, you know, like just the little different things can leave you so bitter. And we know a lot of people that are extremely bitter by some of these actions, you know, mm-hmm. going forward. They're very skeptical of everything. They're very they're angry about everything. But like that, you got a right to feel that way. Absolutely. You know, like you know, like simple things of buying a Mercedes or buying a Lexus, that should not have you being pulled over 10 times. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we're all working hard. We earned our money. You know, like, what is the situation or what is the problem? You know, like something as simple as that. Like, that's the amount of times that's happened to, I'm sure I want to even speak for you guys on this, but like the amount of times that's happened to us in our lifetime, like it's even things like that is just, it's preposterous, you know? Yeah, and that leaves a stain on your brain for a length of time. Like, we all have war stories like this, you know? Sure. And I don't think, you know, like sharing those type of war stories is not, it's not something I want to pass to my children, you know? Yeah. But it's like, we're going to have to do it if we're not already doing it. But like, that's not a tradition I want to pass down.
Yeah, man. My son, my little guy, is turning 12 tomorrow. And, you know, one of the things we have to think about is, at what point does he stop being cute to people out in the road?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, when is he too tall to be cute?
Yep.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's the reality of the situation. That takes a toll. It takes a toll, man. Like, you're absolutely right. And we have to make sure that we make space for ourselves to heal from that and to talk about it because it's not going to go away anytime soon. Mm-hmm. But I do hope again that we try to create a world where it can go away using the momentum of what is tragedy, what has been tragedy, to sort of move forward in a more positive direction.
And just to add to that is just having your strong friends, the ones that you feel that everything is sorted out, but you have to check in on them as well, because they're by themselves. And yeah, like you said, that healing part of it is just to know what's happening, and having these open conversations helps. Really does, man, because no man is an island, right? So you have to be collectively working together and try to keep all of us motivated in some degree.
So moving forward, like with that all said, what are your guys' thoughts going forward with all this? I know we're kind of already kind of rehashing that, but like what do you want to specifically see out of, like, and it could be anything, the verdict of just what do you want to see in your community? Like what is it you guys want to see post George Floyd protest?
I think what I love, because he's my brother and we can relate on many levels of speaking. I want to find, hopefully this awakens more brothers to be like us.
Yeah.
I think everybody's too conformed and complacent to where they are and happy where they're at. And if my man's not happy, you shouldn't be happy. We all have to be working together as a people. And that's one way is educating yourself, knowing your purpose, knowing your people. Be more informed with that. That will definitely empower you to understand to move forward. And I think a lot of our people only come to be black when it's February, and then we're back to the normalcy of things, right?
Right.
That, I'm just going back to what I said earlier. The light still has to stay on. This situation is an ongoing situation that we face all the time, and we have to be aware of that. I'm not saying to be radical, but at least be consciously be aware of what's happening as a people. That's why I want to see. I want to see that more of that standing out in the forefront.
Yeah, man, I hear that. And I think, you know, if you're asking me what I hope to see post this, I hope that we graduate to a point as a country where we expunge people's cannabis possession records. I hope we graduate to a point as a country where we do away with mandatory minimum sentences. Mm-hmm. I hope we graduate to a point as a country where police officers who behave poorly are held accountable. I hope that we graduate to a point where we don't have significant disparity in graduation rates for black youth and white youth. There's some serious shit going on in our school system right now that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
I hope we graduate to the point as a country where, you know, a black woman who gets breast cancer dies, you know, four times more than a white woman with the same affliction. You know, I hope we get to those points as a country.
externally. And internally, again, I hope we make time for ourselves to heal.
Yeah.
To be okay with ourselves and with one another, and look for opportunities to connect, like Mark was saying, and reach out to each other, and you know, make sure that we're good.
And I hope that Vidal becomes mayor, because he speaks so well.
Oh, I can't run for office, man.
I think you should. I hope. I said I hope.
You're mud. Oh, man.
I actually just feel like, you know, what I love seeing, you know, there's always a positive and everything. And I guess the positive I'll take away from this situation so far is watching the unified energy, I think, is a great thing. It's all a start. It's all a start. Like seeing people be a little bit more aware, or certain people now, even in our community, waking up is a great thing. But that's just a start. That can't be the end line. Mm-hmm. Like, in touch of what you guys are saying too, like taking care of each other, you know, checking on your brother, checking on your sister, checking on your, you know, your elders, you know, checking on the youth, making sure we're all in a great space mentally, you know what I mean? And recovering properly, contributing to our community, building the community financially, you know, our Black community financially, I think is like I said, you know, with the quarantine being a reset push, I'm seeing, you know, things coming out of this right now where you're seeing different like posts of Black owned businesses and the names of Black owned businesses and which ones to go to, restaurants, hair salons. But I'm seeing a lot of those just for Ontario, for Toronto, and even in the States, and just seeing different posts of contributing to that, rebuilding that. And that was even pre George Floyd. That was my thing too. It's like I'm looking at like the Black community. You're seeing a lot of small businesses die out right now, and I'm looking at that like, yo, how do I contribute to, like, you know, continue to purchase and save, like try to help save, you know, my brothers and sisters in our community that way. So Seeing this now and seeing people make that aware, going so far as to making like Instagram accounts or Instagram posts or doc, you know, folders and files of different restaurants and different Black businesses. Like, I think that's super important. Like, you have a business right now, Mark, as well, like clothing line that, you know, like you want to make awareness and contribute to, you know, like that's where we got to be, you know, I think as well. Like, I think this is like an opportunity for us to kind of get back to the roots of that, you know, as well, and supporting our own. Like, we really got to lean on each other too, you know, in more ways than just one, you know? So I think that's the kind of like the spirit of what I'm taking from, you know, all of this, at least some of the things, you know, amongst so many other things. Because, man, it's a system overload, boy. Let me tell you, man.
Come on.
Oh, man. Yep. All the videos. Some has made me laugh, like the senior citizen Hawkeye from the Avengers that had his crossbow, you know.
Oh.
And then got taken care of, like, to the
from his own people though. His own people beat the shit out of him.
I thought that was unbelievable. That was one of the most unbelievable things I saw over the weekend.
No, did you see have you seen the Usain Bolt one?
No.
So the guy got arrested, and it's like six cops taking him to the van.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that.
Oh, yeah, yes.
And you hear the commentator, and Usain Bolt ready for a thing. And he here's the gun, and this guy just took off, man.
Oh, man. There was the brother in on the horse in New York, right?
Yo, he took the cop's horse. Yeah, man.
Yeah,
I don't know, man.
And then you're seeing the like unfortunate ones, like the protests or the gathering on the highway in Minnesota, and that semi-automatic truck, like the semi truck, you know, the 18-wheeler coming barreling down, where everybody had to run for their lives.
Yeah.
And I couldn't, like, that was, and the fact that he basically got released, he hasn't got charged yet. I can't believe that, like.
He didn't get charged at all.
He didn't get charged at all. Like, I can't believe that. Like, that to me was, like, borderline, not even borderline. That was sadistic. If anybody's been in the 18-wheeler, like, the sight lines, there's nothing blocking your obstruction. You know what I mean? I don't care if you don't know if it's that's people. Just the fact that you're seeing a crowd of something, it could be animals, whatever it is, you know enough just as a driver to slow down. So the fact that, like, they had to throw bikes and stuff in front of the 18-wheeler just to get him to stop. Like, that guy, I don't know. Like, if that crowd didn't move, like, was he just plowing, like, thousands of people over? Like, what was his intentions?
I don't know, but that could have been like a Rodney King situation. They could have pulled his ass out of that thing and just
they did.
Yeah, they didn't have any bricks or anything, but they beat him up a little bit. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, like when you're seeing that or like the different areas or like, you know, Minnesota, Dallas, different situations where different cities, I mean, where you're seeing loads and loads of bricks in front of stores. Like, what is it, like the things that are getting exposed? I'm glad it's getting exposed. But, man, it's exhausting, man. It's exhausting.
Well, the whole thing, this racism never changed. It's just now it's just being documented faster and streamed. So we're just getting a glance of everything, so we don't have to rely on CNN and the other commentators are giving us information. We get it off of our device now, man.
Yeah,
it's a lot. It's overload, like you said. It's a lot, man.
Yeah,
that's so, just to try to unpack all that. I don't even want to get into it. It's a lot to for us to talk like this. It's healing, but just to sit there on your phone and be scrolling, like, you just want to turn off your phone.
I can't. I have to take a break from social media, man.
Yeah, you have to. I think that's. It's a mental health aspect of it too. You got to unplug. Yeah, you got to unplug for a certain period of time. Whatever it is for you, whether it's a few days, a few hours, a few weeks for some people, like you gotta detox from it a little bit.
You know. So here's a question: on Tuesday, that blackout Tuesday, were you involved in that? You guys do anything?
I put a black picture up on Instagram, but I mean,
I put a fist up. I put a black fist up.
I wasn't planning to buy anything anyway, so I don't know. I don't know if it really changed much. I think if we organize something a little bit differently, I mean, I'd be down for it, like supporting a black business or something. Right, spending money in black businesses for a while, but
yeah.
I think that was something that originally was identified for music, right? There was some.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
That was the music week on Wednesday is the day when they released the albums and stuff like that, and they wanted to take a stop or slow it down and not release it or sharing music. That was the whole premise behind it.
Okay.
But it just took wind to something else, and everybody wanted just to show a level of solidarity with that hashtag. To me personally, I almost feel like I got co-opted in a way, because I was like, let me just check the hashtag. And I clicked onto the hashtag, you know, when they go to the field of all the hashtag and you see this back squares of everybody. And I clicked on any random square box, and all I saw was like a white guy. It's okay, that's nice. He's in level of solidarity. Clicked another one, an Asian person, another white guy. I'm seeing out of 20 people, I saw a majority of people were just white and nobody black. But I'm like, why is that? But in my stream, my regular home stream, I see everybody else who I know posting it. The one that reflects with the hashtag, and it wasn't. So I was just questioning what's going on here. And then I realized Instagram is not owned by anybody that's black. It's owned by a bigger machine, which is Facebook. Mm-hmm. So there's something to think about sometimes when we do things as a level we want to be in support. Just be mindful, what are we supporting?
What are we supporting? The trend of it all. I think that's why that led me to put the black fist and not just a black picture.
Exactly.
You know, I think that's what led me to do that, at least, because I woke up in the morning and saw that I didn't really understand what it was about. I got the gist of it a little bit. I didn't realize until later on, like even this morning, I don't think I realized it was the music industry that was their own way of kind of doing that. My thing was, I'm like, yo, this is not the time to suppress your voice. You know, like that better not be, like, if you want to post that, the black picture or like a dark picture, just nothing there, fine. But that better not be your only post of the day. Like, if you have information to share, especially regarding anything that's regarding the protests and stuff, you still better share it. That better not be the only thing. So I'm like, silencing your voice is not something I'm interested in, you know? So I didn't really, that's why I think I put the black fist up, because I'm like, I don't support like suppression of the voice right now.
Nope.
You know, so
yeah, I hear that.
It was interesting though, because you saw different takes on it though. I agree with Mark. Like it was a little weird. Like it threw me off guard. Like, I didn't quite understand what was exactly happening. You know, as a society now, especially the social media influenced society, we just follow trends a lot, you know, without really asking what's happening. You know, not saying us, but like just in general, like you see people follow a certain thing and we're all doing it.
And right. Hence why I say these influencers who have these big platforms, they gotta stick to it, man. If you're I'm going back drawing that line. If you're about us, stay with us, man. Don't just give me one little tag or whatever, and then you're back to your playing your music.
Yeah.
Like you got to be the voice for a lot of people, because they buy your music, they wear your stuff. You got to be, you have to be an advocate to this. I'm honestly, you gotta be those spaces to be uncomfortable for the with other people who may not get it. But you gotta let them know that you're not having this no more.
Yeah, man.
We'll see how this plays out. I'm really interested to see who's gonna stay in the trenches with us. Because not so much people do it. So
that's right. Stay invested.
Yeah, I totally agree. And to all those that keep looking for listen, you know, I love the fact that athletes and entertainers and people are you know, expressing their voices. That's just wood on the fire. I think that's amazing. But the expectation of waiting for somebody to make those comments and getting mad that, like, okay, why didn't the owner make stay something? I'm like, well, is that what's we really, you know, not to say we don't really need that. We do need all voices on deck, but like, I just think it's about us right now. You know what I mean? I think that's like to me, that's the most important thing right now. I remember Dave Chappelle used to tell this joke where, like, you know, in a social unrest or that type of situation, you have people out there like, where's Ja Rule when you need him? You know, like, we need to hear Ja Rule's voice. Like, that's not the angle that we're looking at right now. Like, you know, so it's like, I said, as much as I love athletes and, you know, I want them to share their voice and their opinion on this thing. I don't know. I'm not emotionally attached to waiting for their answer. You know, I'm not
emotionally attached either. To me, it's like a benefit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like, it's like a little bonus. And like, that's why we were talking. I can't remember when we were talking last, but we were talking about LeBron and the fact that the current arguably best player in the game uses his platform the way he does is so tremendous. Like, I have to rate him because he gives permission for every other player to do it. Like, the ones who, if they did it, could get in trouble, won't now because LeBron does it. And they can't get him in trouble because he's the best player. It would be like Tom Brady doing it. But he won't. But it would be like Tom Brady doing it.
No, you're right.
But no, I have to rate that 100%.
But look at Michael Jordan now. See, you hear his comment? He said something recently.
Yeah, but
yeah, enough's okay. Enough's enough.
Too little, too late, Mike.
But look at the timing after his documentary, and now this has been going on, and now he's saying something. Is it based on?
I shouldn't say that. I mean, like, I agree with Cal. It shouldn't be an expectation.
Like, no.
If they do it, like I said, I think it's a bonus, and it just makes me like appreciate them as human beings a little bit more.
Exactly. Like,
I mean, it doesn't take away from the fact that Michael Jordan's the best basketball player ever played the game. But,
right.
You know what I mean? There is the asterisk beside him because he refuses to get involved in anything political, I guess, up until this point.
Until this point. He's there.
Yeah, he's making a stand now. Like I said, if he comes around now and he's kicking over tear gas canisters, great. Like, I know he's not coming to save us at the same time. So that's why I'm like, okay, like, it's if he doesn't say anything, like, I'm not wasting energy on that. If your favorite rappers or your favorite artists aren't saying anything, it's, yeah, you know, you have the right to be disappointed. You know, I'm not saying that you don't. You have the right to be disappointed. But, you know, we that can't stop us from moving to what the end game is here right now, you know?
I'm going to be Angel's advocate. You look at Nike did an ad. So you tell me Jordan's a trillion dollar kind of guy. Can't do something with the jump man and speak his values of what's going on. No one's not going to say anything. They will probably support that. They will love to see him do something like that.
Yeah.
Instead of doing a quotable of what he feels,
right?
Do something bigger.
Like I said, man, I can't put that burden on him to be the one, but it would be nice.
It'd be nice. Yeah.
I think my philosophy on it too is this. I don't try to force activism on people who aren't prepared or, you know, or are not in that space to be an activist, because to put that power in the wrong person's hands, that could be troublesome too. And I'm not saying Jordan isn't the, you know, like, you put it in the wrong hands, it'll be trouble. But I'm just, I just feel like if, you know, certain people aren't, they're not built for it. And
for sure.
And to put that on them, to force them to be an activist, something like, it, not everybody is built for that. And, you know, to be a leader in that way. And okay, I'd rather put that on somebody that it's almost worthy of. You know what I mean? Like, okay, they want that. They want that responsibility.
Okay, yeah, so I'm an Angel's advocate again. So okay. What about, do you hear anything about, I mean, with Kaepernick now? Has he said anything?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I think he's been saying stuff. I know behind the scenes, he's kind of doing stuff, and also I know he's come out and said that he's basically funding any bailing out or providing legal defense of any of any protester and stuff. So
yeah, he had, and I so and to tie into a previous conversation that we had, that's not where the pressure should be. I want Tom Brady to say something, not Kaepernick.
You know what? You're right.
Why doesn't Tom Brady dismantle racism in the NFL? Why doesn't Robert Kraft dismantle racism in the NFL or in America in general? Why doesn't he have something to say about it? Mm. Let them fix their own problem.
No.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. You're right. And it's funny as you say that, because now I don't know what the executive NFL executive, a former NFL executive that came out this weekend and is saying that the Minnesota Vikings should hire Kaepernick as a on their team as a coach, or get him on the team as a quarterback or backup quarterback, because basically they were wrong on banishing him from the league. You know, everything that happened, he was right. He was all the way right. We're the ones that wrong. We need to write this right now. And I find that funny, like watching that now, you know, seeing that story now, where it's like, you knew even in the time that it was happening, that it was wrong, like how the treatment of him was wrong, and, you know, everything that he was doing was absolutely right. You know, you knew he was going to be made a hero. And now it's like, he looks like a prophet.
Yeah, we all knew that.
We all knew that, like, you know.
Apparently Drew Brees didn't, and still doesn't. So,
Drew Brees. Like, so you think he has a chance of coming into the league now, based on all this?
I don't know. I really haven't even thought that far, to be honest, in terms of if he's going to come back to the league or not. But the fact that you're hearing that conversation, to me, I think it's almost laughable to me. You know, like that's really, so you didn't believe anything he said before? Or that was, it was off like a script or something that he was reading off of? You know, I think that's unbelievably comical. Like, when I saw that comment, like the Minnesota Vikings, Minnesota should go out of their way to hire him because of what happened with George Floyd. Like, okay, really?
Yeah, yeah, that's like, wow. Honestly, that's a little bit. I don't know, man. I hear you. I'd love to see him in the league, but I don't know, man.
Yeah. I don't know about that. Like I said, I'm not even thinking that far. I'm just
like, I don't.
But I just think that is comical, just to touch on the Kaepernick thing. I think actually comical.
Definitely.
But on that note, fellas, listen, man, thank you guys for coming on this podcast, gentlemen, and having this conversation. Like I said, I don't think this is going to be the last by any means, because how do you get decades and decades of police brutality in an hour and change? How do you shrink that down? You can't. It's impossible.
Yeah, man.
You know, but
yeah, no, it was real good, man. It's good to connect with you again, Mark, even though I talk to you like every 2 days.
Yes.
But, you know what I mean? Good to hear your voice again.
Yeah, no, this is good. I think we need to do more of these conversations.
Appreciate it, Big Cal. Last, I thought I was banned from your show. I'm glad you invited me back, man. I want you to know I'm not going to misbehave again.
Okay, no problem. Thank you.
Oh, wow. Don't
forget. Yo, I got banned. You didn't know that story.
No, I didn't know. Wow.
I'm joking. I kid. Thank you all for tuning into the AV Podcast. I appreciate you taking the time out to listen to what we have to say. Special shout out goes out to Mark Stoddard and Vidal Chavanez for coming on the AV Podcast and having this discussion with me. I'm not done with this topic yet. I plan on opening up the conversation again next week on this topic, so please tune in. Look, it's a sad time, a traumatic time, but the seeds of change are there. We have to continue to provide the soil and the water to make it grow and blossom to the point where real changes are made. Everyone outside of the community is making apologies and wanting to stand with us, corporations and everything, and that's nice. But now your actions need to be so loud towards systemic racism and policies that we can no longer hear those apologetic words. But more than that, to my brothers and sisters, my black queens and kings, what we do with this energy is so important. We have to now make it count. We can't be protesting again in 5 to 10 years about the same issues. We just we just really need to make this count. Once again, thank you for listening to the AV Podcast. Please continue to listen, rate, review, and subscribe on any other platforms that you listen to any of my shows from South Shore AV Radio, specifically on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. And to listen to the rest of my catalog of podcast shows, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAV.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAV.com. For Mark Stoddard and Vidal Chavanas, this is Cal C. And you've just tuned in to the AV Podcast on South Shore AV Radio. On to the next podcast, folks. Peace and love. We out.